The floor now belongs to the most learned Father Moses. He is so well known throughout Greek Orthodoxy for his spirituality and his work that he needs no introduction. His presentation is entitled The Earliest Life of Saint Joseph the Hesychast. Your Eminences, Reverend Fathers, Elders and Eldresses, beloved brothers and sisters, on July 20, 1962, Elder Joseph of Vatopedis sent a biographical letter about his elder, Saint Joseph the Hesychast, to Hieromonk Panteleimon in Boston. Its exact title was A Brief Life of Our Venerable Father Joseph the Hesychast, written by his spiritual child, the monk Joseph, in the year 1962. To my most beloved brother, the monk Panteleimon, the life of my ever memorable father Joseph the Hesychast, who reposed. On August 15, 1959. Holy Newsgate of St. Paul, Mount Athos. This manuscript has only recently been published by the Holy Monastery of Vatopedi. The author of this interesting, valuable, and delightful biography bears the same name as its subject. Today he lives as a monk at the Holy Monastery of Vatopedi, and this work constitutes the earliest life of his blessed elder. Elder Joseph of Vatopedi was born in Drosia, Paphos, on December 20, 1921, and his secular name was Socrates Pantelas. In 1936, he entered the renowned and ascetic Holy Monastery of Stavrobouni to embrace the monastic life. In 1946, he went to the Holy Skate of St. Anna in pursuit of greater ascesis, and in the spring of 1947, he eagerly placed himself in obedience to Elder Joseph, the fellow ascetic of Elder Arsenius, at the small caves of the remote Little St. Anna Skate. There, on April 11th of the following year, 1948, Elder Joseph tonsured him as a great schema monk. In 1951, he moved with his elder and the entire brotherhood to the caves of Newsgate, where he remained until 1975. He subsequently lived as a monk at the holy monasteries of Kotlumusiu and of the Precious Cross at Mindis in Cyprus, and from 1987 onward at Vatopedi Monastery. For 2 years, from 1980 to 1982, he lived in the Semenopetra cell of the Annunciation of the Theotokos in Kapsala. The recipient of this important letter was John Mitropoulos in secular life. He was born in Detroit, America, on June 21, 1935, to a father from the Peloponnese and a mother from Asia Minor. In 1956, he entered the Holy Monastery of St. Panteleimon, the Russian monastery on Mount Athos, to embrace the monastic life. He became close to Elder Joseph in July 1957, and the following year he departed for America, where in 1962 he founded the Holy Monastery of the Transfiguration of the Savior in Boston. In 1963, Panteleimon, who is now a hero monk, was tonsured as a great schema monk by Elder Arsenios. This biographical letter about Elder Joseph consists of 74 handwritten pages without paragraph breaks. The handwriting is relatively legible, though the text contains many errors in spelling and syntax. It was clearly not written for publication, nor did anyone else review and correct it. It was probably sent in response to the recipient's earnest request as a remembrance of the elder whom he had known and for the spiritual benefit of both himself and his brotherhood. The writing vividly conveys profound respect, well-founded love, and gratitude. It does not dwell on dates or detailed biographical information. Its principal aim is to extol his ever-memorable elder as a strict ascetic, a genuine hesychast, a man of fervent prayer, and a discerning teacher. This account is inspired, moving, direct, precise, and instructive. It was written 3 years after the blessed repose of the elder, and we do not believe that it contains any exaggeration whatsoever. It offers a personal testimony. The author does not relate what he heard from others, but what he himself saw and heard during the 12 years he sat at his elder's feet at Little St. Anna Skite and New Skite, during all-night vigils, long hours of prayer filled with tears, compunctionate celebrations of the Divine Liturgy in the chapels of the Honorable Forerunner and the Annunciation, his elder's wonderful teachings, the disclosure of logismoi, intrusive thoughts, and the small, blessed gatherings of that little brotherhood. At the beginning he writes, I grieve because I have been deprived of the person and treasure dearest to me during our sojourn in this world. He also writes about himself, when I considered my situation and what a treasure I had lost, especially in these evil days, I decided at least to write his life, recalling as much as I could, so that I might have this consolation, since I shall not see him again here. Yet he also writes for another noteworthy reason. There are always those ready to criticize and accuse contemporary monasticism and this sacred place of ours. If they are willing, they will learn that in every generation and every age there will be people who truly fear God and have loved Him with their whole soul. Elder Joseph was indeed such a true man of God, one who loved him beyond measure. Despite all the ordeals he suffered both in old age and in the severe trials of illness he endured in that place, his original devotion never diminished in the least. His love for God also extended to all people, and especially to his spiritual children. He was always deeply comforting and gentle. His fatherly concern was so evident that nothing else was needed to establish a strong spiritual bond among those he guided, a bond that no circumstance could weaken. He strove earnestly to impart spiritual benefit to us, and no labor or sacrifice wearied him in pursuing precisely this purpose. His foremost concern was to urge us toward the Jesus prayer, Lord Jesus Christ. The God-making work of prayer was truly the chief work of his entire life. He also observed this inviolable rule throughout his life. He would undertake nothing until he had first received assurance through prayer, and he would not easily make a decision without such assurance. He often repeated what he continually experienced. The foremost work of the hesychast is the Jesus prayer. Whoever claims to possess the prayer must have acquired it as an abiding possession, not merely experience it from time to time, for anyone can say it in that manner. The one who, by the grace of God, is counted worthy to acquire the prayer as his own. He is said to possess the remembrance of God, and through it to gain experience of divine aid, no small thing on the path of spiritual life. After a time of great tribulation for the elder, there came a visitation of divine grace during prayer, described with the mastery found in the Neptic writings. The Jesus prayer began to be said within my heart with great sweetness. It brought about such a transformation in me that I could not tell whether I was alive and still here upon the earth. My senses ceased to function, and I could not turn my nose, the spiritual intellect, back toward myself. I could only behold in awe and ecstasy that dazzling white light which was within me, or rather in which I myself was immersed, and the sweetness with which the Jesus prayer was being said within my heart. My heart was saying the Jesus prayer on its own, without toil or effort, but with such a harmonious rhythm that I wondered whether I was one person or somehow composed of two selves. I do not know how long this state lasted, he would tell us. At the skate of St. Basil, he had constructed a kind of artificial cave out of planks. Every day during the hours of peace and hesychia, inner stillness, he would sit there and say the Jesus prayer. His daily rule was to sit inside and keep his nous, the spiritual intellect, within his heart for 6 full hours, and only then rise. He had an ardent and constant desire to meet other practitioners of noetic prayer and speak with them about its wondrous mysteries, as he relates. We would leave our huts and travel wherever we heard or thought that we might meet such hesychasts. Everywhere we found devout people and elderly spiritual fathers who comforted and encouraged us, but nothing beyond that. Nowhere could we find anyone who possessed the prayer within himself and had attained theoria, divine vision. Very few understood what we were seeking, and even they could not offer us any specific help. The others considered us mad. This same lament was shared by other great and virtuous elders of our own time, both on and beyond the Holy Mountain. Even our brothers and people within the Church failed to understand or accept the virtuous. Instead, they misunderstand them. Others, by contrast, place halos around any elders they happen to approach. According to his fellow ascetic, the blessed elder Arsenios, the elder's poverty was certainly remarkable. When we were young at the beginning, while our bodies were still strong, we lived in such extreme poverty and dispossession that we possessed almost nothing. Their fasting was also strict, especially the elders. They ate oil only on Saturdays and Sundays, and not always, but only when they could find it. Every day at the 9th hour, the elder ate 25 drams of dried bread. If they happened to have boiled greens or legumes, he ate only a small amount of those as well. Their severe ascesis reached extremes, and, to their sorrow, some people accused them without restraint. Their weakness from excessive fasting, the lack of fats in their diet, and their habits, old cassocks torn to shreds, gave them a repellent appearance, and anyone who saw them would whisper, "There are the deluded ones." My beloved, the life recounts visitations of divine grace in dreams and visions, appearances of the Lord, the Theotokos and angels, as well as fierce assaults by demons. The blessed elder passed through the stages of sanctification, purification, illumination, and theosis divinization. Free and possessing a pateia, freedom from the passions, filled with grace and overflowing with love, he would say, according to his distinguished biographer, "His love for other people makes him wish, if it were possible, to place them all within his heart, to take upon himself the pain and sorrow of every human being, and to die for them all so that they might be happy. As for God, he feels himself vanishing into the depths of his humility and dissolving into ceaseless tears as he reflects upon God's love for all his creatures. Concluding humbly, he writes, "Behold, my beloved brother Pantelaimon, in accordance with your desire, I have briefly described whatever I could remember from the life of our ever-memorable father. If, by God's mercy, we later remember other things or learn further details from others who were with him before us, especially his soul profiting counsels, which arose from the experience of his life, we shall write again. Pray for me as well, that we may not receive many stripes." We humbly believe that this biography possesses the virtues of directness, vividness, spontaneity, and simplicity, and that it was not written for publication. The biographer does not pose as an author. Rather, he offers an important personal testimony in a deeply sincere, clear, concise, simple, and beautiful manner. And for this, we thank him from the heart. Compared with his later writings on the subject and those of others who wrote about the elder, his account remains the earliest, precise, and moving. As he himself says in a later and more extensive biography, it is extremely important to record the lived experiences of devout and virtuous people so that later generations may be strengthened and inspired by their example. Carefully and responsibly, without fanaticism or ulterior motive, we present from the life of our ever-memorable elder those things which we personally saw and heard. Elsewhere, he also says that the elder continues. The ascetic and neptic tradition. Today we likewise present this continuation and extension of the tradition through our contemporary teachers and fathers to the glory of Christ and of our ever-living Church. His fellow disciple, the former abbot, Elder Ephraim of Philotheu, writes similarly in the introduction to the edition of the Elder's Marvelous Letters, because his very life was for us a teaching both written and spoken, because we learn from our own experience the power of his words, and because for years many have quietly entreated us to write about the Holy Elder through this present work, we now give him the opportunity to speak for himself through his letters. In worldly terms, Elder Joseph was uneducated, having completed only the second grade of primary school, yet in divine matters he was wise and taught by God. The University of the Desert taught him the things we chiefly need, the things of heaven. These divine things can be heard only with difficulty and with a courageous spirit, and can be put into practice only through struggle and great labor. Elder Emilianos of Simonopetra writes with great depth, as has been said, "The blessed Elder Joseph, known as the Hesychast, is a source of pride for the more recent history of the Holy Mountain, because in difficult times he renewed the centuries-old experience of hesychasm and prayer on Mount Athos. Through his intense and unceasing assises and through the spiritual formation and instruction of his children, he prepared a new generation devoted to the unceasing Jesus prayer." As we bring this unassuming presentation to a close, we would like to offer a few final chronological details concerning the blessed elder Joseph the Hesychast. He was born on February 12, 1897, in Lefkes on Paros, according to the Registry of Males of the Community of Lefkes, as Mr. Saliprantis reported. He arrived on the Holy Mountain in 1922. The monastic register of the Holy Monastery of Great Lavra records his arrival in 1923, but this probably refers to his arrival within the territory of the Lavra. In 1924, he was tonsured a great schema monk in the desert of Great Lavra, at the cave of Saint Athanasius the Athonite, by hero monk Eftimios, from 1924 to 1938. He remained at the skate of Saint Basil. From 1938 to 1951, he lived the ascetic life at Little St. Anna's Gate, and from 1951 until August 15, 1959, when he reposed from heart failure, he lived at New Skate. May his prayer always accompany us. We thank Father Moses, who did not use all the time allotted to him. Did I frighten you? I frightened him a little. Ah, you shortened it a little. Thank you for doing so. You are a good man. Yes, indeed, Mr. Olympios, you told me your name has informed me that because we must go to receive the holy icon of the Most Holy Theotokos, the discussion will take place tomorrow. It will be combined with tomorrow's session. Tomorrow we will begin at 9:30.